welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here with...
Dan.
Chris.
Lee.
Dan's back.
Full compliment of us.
Full compliment. Chris is back. Dan's back.
Everyone's back.
Yep.
Lee never went away.
Lee never went anywhere. I never went anywhere.
Well, you did.
Well, I did. I missed the live blog this weekend. But still a job.
Long time listener, first time caller.
He might have something sensible to say next. Shall we talk about Brazil anyway?
Yeah, we talk about Brazil.
It's a country in South America.
There wasn't a lot to say, really, was there?
It was a race where a lot could have happened and nearly happened, but then not a lot really did happen. I mean, it's been the site of many a classic race.
There weren't any of the dead bits of race that we see sometimes where there's absolutely nothing going on.
No, there was always something going on, but nothing.
But
wasn't
interesting.
I'd say it had a smattering of nothing going on. It was seasoned with nothing.
Yeah, it was seasoned with nothing. It was that
sounds like the world's most disappointing firework display.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's how it was.
I think the problem was the whole race we expected Hamilton to do something.
Well, he nearly did a couple of times, but Rosberg just had the measure on him again. Yeah, exactly. And then at the end of the race, we heard the reverse from the argument in Malaysia. It's too difficult to follow an evenly matched car. And which, let's be honest, Hamilton hasn't had to do much of that this year.
Well, so. No. I mean, point you made before we started recording, Chris, was maybe the Mercedes just aren't designed to follow cars.
Perhaps, yeah. Maybe they're just designed to be out in front all of the time, or when Williams make mistakes.
Yeah. Not if.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe Nico's car is designed to be the one that follows.
Perhaps. Who knows?
I'm back in the tinfoil hattery there.
Maybe you swap the cars over.
No, I mean, that's in all seriousness, Rosberg again, for the second race in a row, was the better driver. Had the measure of Lewis Hamilton once again.
Definitely won this race.
Won the race. It wasn't the case.
Lewis lost.
No, that's it, yeah. He won the race. Fair and
square. Same as Mexico.
Yeah.
On a quick Lewis Hamilton note, was it a Photoshop or is his number plate from the crashed Zonda really hashtag believe?
I think that's
a Photoshop.
Photoshop.
But the only reason I think that is because he had it written on the back of his fucking helmet. Being the operative word.
I don't know that you'd have a hashtag in your number plate anyway. I'm not sure that's allowed. Otherwise,
I've got a funny
feeling. My number plate would be question marks, and Pastor Maldonado's would just be exclamation marks.
I've got a funny feeling that there's an awful lot that's allowed that you wouldn't think was allowed in Monaco if you've got the Benjis to back it up with.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you can do pretty much anything in Monaco. What happens in Monaco, nobody ever hears about.
if that is hashtag believe, that's terrible.
I mean, you made the point, Paul, before about Hamilton and, you know, I partied too hard and then I crashed my Pagani Zonda. Does sound like the most
first world problems.
That's beyond first world problems. That is not 0.5
problems.
Yeah.
First world problems with me not being able to quite decide whether to get the Samsung Galaxy S6 or the S6 Edge. That's a first world problem.
That's a first world problem. Not, oh no, crash my Pagani's on because I partied too much.
I best use one of my other cars.
Will the horrors never cease?
That's it. I wonder if his team are going to say anything to him now. You know, he's... not that he reeled the partying in, but since he's won the championship, he appears to obviously let himself go a little bit more. I wonder if it's affected his definitely affected his race in Brazil. I wonder if it affected his race in Mexico, and is it going to affect him in Abu Dhabi? Now Rosberg's won two on the bounce.
Dry country though, isn't it?
Yeah, but if he now he's got a private jet, he can fly from New York whenever he wants.
That dry country falls very much underneath the. It's legal if you've got enough money to back it up with.
And I don't think that Hamilton is looking any slower than he has been. I think it's at least as much Nico stepping up as it is Lewis.
I mean, there's been some signs to especially in Brazil that points to the fact that Nico Rosberg has actually increased his corner speeds. He's able to go around corners a lot faster than he has been previously this season. Obviously, it's too late for this year, but is it a great precursor for next year that Nico Rosberg is sort of, I don't know whether it's a data sharing thing.
This is a bad pun alert.
More about feels and data sharing.
Yeah.
This is a bad pun alert. But when the championship was still sort of kind of open, and we were saying that Nico was a beaten man, and we said that he did need to get a grip.
He's got his grip.
He's got grip.
Yeah.
I think it's Hamilton slowing down.
Just to correct you, it wasn't actually Believe on the back of his helmet, it was Still I Rise.
Oh no, it's on a different bit.
Oh right.
Yeah, no, there's a Believe on there.
He has Still I Rise on the back of his helmet all the time. Mm. Yeah. He has that tattooed on his back, Still I Rise. So there's
all sorts of twattery going on. All sorts.
Yes.
He's an expressive human being, isn't he, Lewis?
That's
Hamilton?
One way of putting it.
Yeah, so is Charlie Manson.
I think it's unfair to compare the two.
This is going south again. Yes.
I don't know, actually, because I'll hold off on any comparisons till I've heard Lewis Hamilton's songs, but some of Manson's were all right. I mean, Look at Your Game Girl, the one that Guns N' Roses covered. That was really good, actually, and the stuff that he did with the Beach Boys. Anyway,
should we talk about Formula One?
I think we're probably better.
Yeah. So, Brazilian home favourite then, Felipe Massa, got disqualified from the race.
Cheat.
He had a hot race.
Well, yeah, more than a hot race. He had one hot wheel.
They pulled back his car and put a penny in the back of it.
Hot Wheels did not lead the way.
How could they have failed to notice that one of the tyre warmers had overheated by 27 degrees when they're only meant to go to 100?
Was it just one tyre?
Just one tyre.
Yeah, but that also, the temperature increase also obviously gave an incorrect reading of the pressure.
It was an extra half PSI that he had in there above the limit.
Yeah, because it was too hot.
Mm.
So that was also another issue. So they disqualified him from the race. No, they didn't disqualify Mercedes at Monza when they had this problem.
Oh, the original deflate gate.
The original deflate tyre gate thing, whatever it was.
But however, at Monza they didn't have their testing procedure nailed down.
They brought in the testing procedure post Monza.
I'd also argue that the difference in temperature, if you're doing this purely on a safety thing, that it comes across as being a lot more dangerous.
Yeah, but it wasn't a help to Felipe Massa, was it? Let's be honest. He was almost and so anonymous during the race that he could have been driving the Sauber again.
That's one way of putting it.
It's true, isn't it? We saw more of the Saubers this weekend with Felipe Massa being the other Brazilian with a very similar name, Fred, as they call him on Sky.
Yeah, I mean, it was obvious that we were actually going to see some of Sauber this week just because of driver and sponsor. I've got to admit, I didn't watch the race live. I just followed it on our live blog. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, Banco do Brasil, of course, their sponsor, has changed the Sauber livery completely this year. We normally used to see them, well, in the old days they were black, and then they became white, and then they went black again, and now they're blue and yellow because of the sponsor.
Really is the ugliest car on the grid as well, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Colour scheme wise, definitely. Because they tried to keep the old Sauber rear wing, it just doesn't work, I'm afraid.
Well, it might do, it's just that anonymous, we can't tell.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I mean, we tend to see an awful lot of Sauber on the television, do we?
Except when they're being pit-manoeuvred by the...
But they're being pit manoeuvred by... We've all watched Cops, we all see the pit manoeuvre. It was like T-boning, essentially.
Yeah.
when they kick the back end of the car out and then slam into the side of it. It's pretty much what Pastor Maldonado did to Marcus Ericsson.
They weren't anonymous when Marcus Ericsson tried to drive into the side of Jenson Button in the pit lane, were they? Was it Ericsson?
I don't know.
Or was it Nazir? Someone got a penalty.
In free practice one, Jolyon Palmer got a penalty for pulling out on Jenson Button.
How is that going to work? Is he going to have three places taken off him at his first race?
No, it's a $1,000 fine for the Lotus team.
I assume it'll stick penalty points on his super licence as well, which will carry over into next season.
If it's an unsafe release, that I wouldn't have thought he'd get penalty points.
It was a massively unsafe release. If you can watch the replay, I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Yeah, but I mean that's a team responsibility, isn't it? Not a driver responsibility.
Yeah, the driver only goes when the lollipop man.
Yeah.
Or the guy pressing the
button. He's got a team around. We can't see.
The driver can't see what's going on.
Yeah. There was a gentleman waving him forward. The button was coming down the pit lane. It was his fault.
See, normally I'd turn around and say that in Formula One terms, $1,000 fine is nothing, but it's probably fucking crippling for Lotus right now.
Lotus who were...
Well, no, because they'll just send the bill to Julian Palmer because he pays enough for his practice sessions, doesn't he?
Hell yeah.
As we discussed on last week's aborted recording of a podcast.
$750,000, did you say?
$250,000 per session.
$250,000.
And it's going to
still don't have enough money to pay Pirelli.
He can drive my car if he wants.
Just lend him it for an hour and a half on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, you let him have that for what, 150 grand?
Yeah. You can have the van for the weekend if he wants. I'd let him race it
for 10 grand.
10 pounds.
Yeah, you can borrow any of my Cortinas. 10 grand, mate. 10 grand.
Including the one in the mana colour scheme?
Yeah. You can have the one in the mana colour scheme if you really want to.
Speaking of where Lewis has gone wrong, though, he's saying he's going to try and work hard to understand why he started losing out to Nico. I think we can probably sum it up very easily. Put the glass down.
Put the glass down, and also...
That doesn't mean drink from the bottle.
Spend less time with Mr. Moët and Chandon.
Yeah, and also, Toto Wolff said it on television after the Mexican Grand Prix, but he said he's reiterated it again this weekend. Nico Rosberg is angry and he's channeling that anger into performance.
Whereas before, Rosberg has just been channeling his anger into effectively throwing the toys out of the pram.
Channeling his anger into becoming across really weird on the podium quite often, Nico Rosberg.
Yeah.
Game on, Ferrari.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations to Lewis. He was the better driver, and I'm really bitter about it, but I can't let it show on my face right now because I'm so hard media trained. It's
almost Vulcan.
Almost. Yeah, almost. I wonder if he's Jedi.
He's almost Vulcan is because they got rid of emotions, haven't they? Whereas all he has left is bitterness.
I mean, one thing that Lewis says is there's been changes to the car that have shifted it in Rosberg's favour, and then Paddy Lowe's come back with, I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, no, because in Nico, I suppose.
Because Nico's sober. That's the changes to the car.
In Nico's own words, Lewis looks for excuses when he doesn't win races.
Says the man who was blown off the course by a gust of wind.
Austin.
Yeah.
But that happened to Alonso, remember? Pre-season.
Did it? Tinfoil.
To be fair, there was only that once he shouted about it, where realistically he's been blown off the track by Lewis like, for most of the season.
This is quite true.
What I have noticed is both at Mexico and Brazil, Nico Rosberg had the Lewis Hamilton coming to push him off the track moment and just was having none of it.
Yeah.
Which is what he should have done way back at the beginning of the season when Hamilton was being super aggressive.
But I think also he's got the pressure off now in that if he does take Hamilton off, he's not losing anyone a world championship. Mercedes are safe. Lewis is safe.
Yeah.
Rosberg's now safe in second
Rosberg's
as well.
Safe.
Yeah.
Rosberg cemented his second place in the championship with that win in Brazil.
Though he wasn't in Mexico in the race in Brazil.
No.
But it means he's got the freedom to do that kind of thing with a lot fewer repercussions. And I think the team are more behind him than they were when Lewis Hamilton was close to winning the world championship.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you can understand why the team were giving Lewis the support at the time because... obviously, it was going to be easier for him to clinch it than it was for Rosberg, so they had to throw the weight behind him.
And now the team goal is for a 1-2 at the race. So.
Yeah.
There is another thing as well, with as far as them being a bit more behind Rosberg now, is that, again, tinfoil hat time, Paul. Well, there must be people high up in Mercedes that when they look at their driver lineup, they look at Lewis Hamilton and go, we want him. He's the one we want to win the stuff. Because he's so much more marketable. You know, the idea of the whole German driver, German team, grand. But Mercedes won Germany. They've won at Germany. So they think of America. Lewis Hamilton is much more marketable into America.
He's much more marketable worldwide, I think, as well.
He's probably much more marketable to Germans, if we're perfectly honest.
And, of course, he got the most expensive Mercedes car in the news this week after his prank.
And I think I would probably argue as well that the second most marketable person in the Mercedes team after Lewis Hamilton is Toto Wolff.
Probably. Oh, Niki Lauda.
No, Niki Lauda. He's not great, let's be honest. He's not great. He says what he thinks.
I love Niki Lauda. I love him.
No, yeah, he says what he thinks. He's a great guy. You know, he says he's completely impartial when it comes to...
Do we think he's leaving to go Ferrari?
It's possible, but we don't know what's going to happen with that yet.
It's kind of a three-way split for his time, because Mercedes still want him, Ferrari allegedly want him, and Sky Deutschland.
Why?
After his services.
What is Niki Lauda? It's fucking weird.
Niki Lauda's an ex-world champion who speaks his mind constantly.
Yeah, but what benefit is he to a team?
He's a non-executive chairman at Mercedes.
Apparently he was the one that brought Lewis in.
Well, I mean that's fine, but he's not gonna go to a different team and then go, Lewis, give it to his Lewis from above, like brap.
No, I mean, the story goes that he took Lewis to one side after the McLaren retirement in Singapore 2012 and said, look, so this is that car's let you down too many times. Mm-hmm. The team has let you down too many times. Come with us and be yourself. And it'll be tough for like the first year. You know, you might not get a win. But then when new regulations come in 2014, we've already got the plans. So we have a really good car for you. See what Vettel's doing at the moment. If you remember at the time, Vettel won 4 championships in a row. It'd be like, come with us. And then you could be like the Vettel. Vettel is now that could be you. I'm saying, I'm sure you think you're faster than Nico Rosberg. Well, you know, come and see what happens. And that's what convinced him to come.
And then
Mercedes.
Lewis Hamilton says, I don't get you. Can you explain it to me in words I can understand? He says, come on, fool, I want you to roll in my Benzo. You've been dripping in diamonds, brap.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually.
And Lewis was, yeah.
Yeah, on
drop, we'll let you wear jeans at Mercedes. You
yeah, drop the accent, Lewis.
No way.
Yeah, drop the accent, Lewis. You're from Surrey.
But there must be a point where Vettel is looking at the way Nico and Lewis are with each other, even when there's no championship at stake. You know, they can't even talk to each other anymore. You know, like when you see them in after the race and thing. And he must be sat there thinking, all I need is a slightly better car and I'm going to batter you while you're arguing with each other.
Yeah.
Well, I think he'll get it in 2016.
Yeah, he seems to think so himself, because he said he's excited about the way the next year's car's looking, and it's going to be a real challenge.
Wouldn't it be terrible if when he starts winning again we get twat Vettel back?
The Ferrari Vettel is hilarious.
No, I think... I think this year has proved that we can have happy Vettel.
Yeah.
And even if he wins another 4 championships, we'll still get happy Vettel.
No, he's not Vettel. Winning it. He's not winning at the minute. Maybe winning Vettel is a knob.
Monaco.
Yeah,
Vettel.
But Red Bull not winning Vettel was.
Yeah, it was pretty mardy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, perhaps Ferrari Vettel is happy Vettel, win or lose.
We shall see.
Maybe.
You know, we'll see what next year's best of press conferences video looks
maybe
like.
Maybe just third place Vettel is the Vettel you want to meet.
Well, I know Nico Rosberg's luck. Vettel would come good just at the wrong time and walk away with next year's championship.
Mind you saying that, the if Nico Rosberg's demeanour is anything to go by, many podiums do not make a happy man.
This is very true. Yeah, but being Vettel was hilarious again this weekend when he was talking about I think it was one of the Sky News delegates gave him the bad news that the Grid Boys were going to be back for this weekend, and he just looked at the reporter and just went, "Well, I think we need to go on strike."
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that, Seb? And he just said, "Strike."
Just Vettel pulling Formula One kicking and screaming into the 20th century.
Absolutely, yeah.
We were talking about maybe trying to get some various Formula One people on the show, you know, during the off season to keep things going. Maybe that's the email we should send to Nico Rosberg. Say, come and talk to us.
We've got pit girls.
No, we could come and talk to us, Nico. Got on dead well with us. None of us are champions either.
Yeah. So, do you want to explain how we managed to get 400 listeners the other week? Because I am mystified. Should we move on down the running order? Because I think we've pretty much covered all the important bits of.
Just like to put forward as well, Max Verstappen proving that you can overtake at Brazil, and it was fantastic driving by the young Dutchman yet again.
That movie made where he was on the curb.
Yeah,
and that was
didn't back out at all.
Absolutely
just,
ace.
They both gave each other enough space, and the Force India just ran out of room.
Yeah,
and Verstappen carried up merrily on his way.
I can't wait to see what he's like next year, because we've had this with drivers before. Kamui Kobayashi,
Jean Alesi,
one to think of. What's his name? Sergio Perez. To be perfectly honest,
it took Perez a couple of seasons to get going there. When he did get going, then he was very, very good at Samba before he made.
But we've had rookie drivers before, which have burst in and then fizzled off.
Which, to be honest, up until he signed for Braun, that's what everyone thought that Jensen was.
Mm-hmm.
He pretty much was, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then his years at McLaren, when McLaren was still relatively successful, he proved that he could race Hamilton.
Yeah. Oh,
on any good day, so.
And on a bad day as well, if you remember Canada, because that was a bad day.
That was the best race of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah. Best race of all time.
The longest race of all time.
It was.
I'm glad we weren't live blogging that one.
No, God.
No. it was tough enough listening to the commentary.
Well, it was mainly about birds.
Yeah.
How many close-ups of rain can you have on falling into a puddle?
I've just spent the weekend in Wales. It's more boring in real life.
I've got this funny thing though, where I find it really relaxing watching wet races, especially if it's wet outside and I watch wet races. It makes me feel really relaxed. It's really strange.
I like laying in bed and listening to the rain on the window. That's always a good feeling.
Paul, any rain related stories you want to get off your chest?
No, not really. I've just spent a wet weekend at a rock festival.
Should we talk about Formula One?
That's our catchphrase.
Sounds like Dan's got some wet rain stories he doesn't want to talk about.
Actually, one other thing about the about this weekend's race, Pastor finishing his fifth race on the trot.
Yeah, no Pastor disasters. However, he did try, as we
already mentioned.
It again.
As we already mentioned, he did try and T-bone Marcus Ericsson off the track. did get a 5-second time penalty for it, but because there were no retirements, nothing was broken. Does not count as a Pastor disaster.
Yeah.
And also the website has Pastor Maldonado, crashtoday.com, registered no. So,
well, that's wrong, because Crofty picked up on it during the race and he said that website now needs updated.
But it's pretty deep. He had an accident.
He crashed into somebody. That is the crash.
It wasn't a crash, it was a nudge.
Yeah, well, if you have a heart attack and you don't die, it's still a heart attack.
If you have an accident, it's not always a disaster.
It's a crash, though. He had a crash.
Ah, yeah, but it's a Pastor disaster predictor, not a Pastor crash predictor.
Well, no, I'm not talking about us, but I'm talking about Pastor did PastorCrash.com.
Yeah.
Pastor crashed.
I don't know.
I don't think he did. I think they rubbed wheels.
We've had this before.
No. He definitely sort of pushed in with his
I'd also like to say, in the Pastor disaster thing, we have called that a crash.
Yeah, but that's when it's caused a retirement.
No. Just when it was a bump with someone. When he's crashed into someone.
When he crashed into Jenson Button, or Jenson Button crashed into him.
Yeah, no, there was another one. I can't remember where it was.
I don't think we ruled that as a past disaster, did we? We're going to have to listen back to old podcasts.
Yeah, I think we are. We'll dig that out and Maybe the adjudication for the Christmas episode.
I think we should.
But he's preparing.
We should rename this as well for the last races. We should have done it from the word go. The Pasta Disaster is just Pasta Disaster Beta. It's not finalised yet. We'll take it out of beta next year.
But I think he's preparing with his fifth finish in a row to be leading that Lotus. I think he's been told to dial it back a little bit, Pastor.
I'm absolutely convinced.
Has to be, because regardless of the amount of money that he's bringing in, if he's being outperformed and outfinished by a rookie,
Julian Palmer.
Yeah,
I think he's going to.
Then that will be the end of his career.
No, it won't. His career should be over anyway.
Well, yeah, but if he can carry on finishing races, then PDVSAL, however you pronounce it, will carry on pumping money into it.
Well, it depends. It depends what their arrangement with is with him. They haven't. Rather than the team saying to Pastor, stop hitting other drivers. Maybe Dave said, but if they haven't said that and they're more than happy to just keep doing pumping money into Pastor, then his career will be there as long as the checks are there.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. I think something may have come down from the sponsors, possibly even via the team, just to say, you know, stop it, or you break that again and we'll stop your pocket money.
I think it is likely to be the sponsors saying, look, there's things like this podcast. We're not the only ones talking about how often Pastor crashes.
He's even been called Crash to Maldonado. Yeah. There is a 10-minute film on YouTube that you can watch about Pastor Maldonado destroying people's careers.
That is fucking genius.
It is amazing.
You know, there were several million views on that. So, yeah, it's not just us.
There's a spoof being prepared at the moment which looks like the Senna DVD cover, but it's Maldonado as a DVD.
Can we link that?
I'll put a link on the page.
See, but Pfutstva must be aware of all of this.
The Venezuelan National Oil Corporation, which
government funded.
Yeah, which, to be honest, if they didn't sponsor him, nobody outside of Venezuela would have really heard of.
I'd argue that Pastor could turn around, given where the Lotus team have been this year. He could have just fired back with, I've got you on telly, haven't I?
But even still.
But the logo's never in one piece, you prick!
PDV are our terrible rivals! We're PDVSA!
It's not...
Stop advertising our rivals, Pastor!
It's not written on the bottom of the car, you bellend!
Do you know what we should sponsor the bottom of Pastor Maldonado's car next year? I don't know how well they would take that.
The three legs, four wheels plank. That's Lee.
So I was going to go along the lines of which plank in the Lotus are we sponsoring?
Renault is probably going to be called next year. Just like to add a citation there.
Yeah, okay. Hang on a second. Pasta Disaster, so very appropriate.
Pasta Disaster.
Oh no, it's PDVSA, isn't it? Pasta Disaster.
Very so
appropriate.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah, I should have thought that one better. Yeah. Right, on to the news.
More news. This has been a threat to the future of the Circuit of the Americas, one of my favourite Grand Prix circuits of recent times. And it's running into financial troubles due to government funding.
Or lack thereof, I have to assume.
More commonly known as doing a Silverstone to it.
Yeah, but the Silverstone was sort of propped up by the BRDC.
Yeah, but it won't be... The British government have said they won't put any money into Silverstone, haven't they? This is the same thing here, isn't it? They've said they're not going to put any money into the circuit.
I think it's to do with Texan governor having to balance the books in Texas.
Well, Texas spend on entertainment. The vast majority of it this year was Formula One.
I would imagine so.
How are we supposed to go and buy them their guns if we run in a Grand Prix?
Okay. There is talk of another Formula One race perhaps happening in California. maybe Las Vegas.
New Jersey. Well, it's still contracted, isn't it?
It's still contracted. It was contracted for this year, wasn't it originally?
It was contracted for about 2010, I think.
Oh right.
Oh yeah, it's been an 8-year contract, but it's
just been pushed back every year.
I don't think the New Jersey race will happen in the next 10 years.
Because basically, the New Jersey race has the New York skyline behind it. The other side of the Hudson, so fantastic to watch.
Oh, that it's as far as Bernie Eccleston's concerned, that New York Grand Prix is the full on money shot for Formula One. That would probably be ace for them.
And there was talk, of course, as well, wasn't there, at one point, of a London street circuit, but Formula One were pipped to that by Formula E.
Mm. I wonder how they'd make a circuit there, though. You know, when you look at the thing.
Well, in London, it was
In New York. That would be the problem, because it would just be all 90-degree turns.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is why it's in New Jersey where they do have slight curves.
Do they have a bend somewhere?
Well, yeah, because it follows the river.
It's the New Jersey Turnpike. It's not the New Jersey Straight Pike.
I'm so ignorant when it comes to geography. I know nothing of what you talk about, Daniel.
The man who threw all that money at the Circuit of the Americas, Tavo Helmond, who we have spoken about before in previous podcasts. He also is responsible for a lot of the financial backing at the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez, where they just recently held the Mexican Grand Prix. And he is rumoured to want to put an awful lot of money into a Formula One team. Supposedly going to be Manor. This hasn't been confirmed. But if he's going to be throwing his money at a team, can he also be seen to be throwing his money at a circuit at the same time that he initially got started?
With the specific intention of building a Formula One circuit there.
Yeah, which has been used for Formula One and MotoGP, and let's be honest, not a lot else.
How much money do you have to have to where not only you think about starting a Formula One Grand Prix, you then go, I want another one and a team?
Yeah, this person, Tavo Helmond, is a very rich man. Those are things.
I mean, Texas are actually cutting the funding to the circuit by $5.4 million from next year, and possibly another $5 million on top of that from collected property taxes that they're now going to distribute elsewhere, rather than what was promised to the circuit when it was built. So
what are they taking back from the circuit? $5 million?
They're cutting the funding by $5 million. I think they put at the moment they put $25 million a year into it.
Doesn't sound a lot in Formula One terms, does it? No. You wouldn't think a track would be under threat because of $5 million.
But the thing is, where the Circuit of the Americas is built, it's in a prime location. It's right next to Austin's International Airport. If the Texas government really wanted to use that for something else, I'm sure they probably could. Mm. But they have to be seen. It has to make money at the end of the day. It has to be a business.
Yeah.
It has to bring people to Texas who spend money in Texas. Mm-hmm. And it has to make, you know, the people who come to Texas and spend the money.
Yeah.
Economically has to outweigh what they put into the track, otherwise it's running at a loss.
I suppose the problem you've got is the fact that it's great for it because it's by the international airport, because I'm sure it has people that travel to Texas to watch the race. You know, we're talking people from outside America essentially going.
Well,
to watch
from outside southern America, the southern USA.
Yeah,
effectively.
But when you've got Formula One, which is a sport which isn't particularly over in America, then I suppose you're not getting people from the surrounding Americas. As,
well, I mean, it was put there because it was easily gettable to from Mexico.
Yeah.
Which of course at the time Mexico didn't have a race.
That's why it's called Circuit of the Americas.
Yeah, yeah. Not Circuit of Texas or Circuit of America.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now Mexico's got a race. That kind of changes things quite a great deal. The other issue,
it's not like having a European race, is it, where people from loads of European countries will travel to go and watch a race.
Oh, like race next year is Azerbaijan. I'm not too many
Next year's European Grand Prix in Asia.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It's fucking
fucking ridiculous, isn't it?
But the other issue that they've got is, again, with the government, where the valuation of the circuit itself and the property taxes that the government want to take. The government say that the circuit should be paying $7.2 million a year, and the circuit are saying we think it should only be $2.8 million.
That's a big difference.
It is.
So that's, you know, that is another just shy of $4.5 million.
So, yeah, so that's
that they could,
nine or ten million.
That's nine,
difference.
That's nine or ten million from one year to the next.
Do you think that's what they want to have? Also, it's not like Formula One are not scared to pull the plug on a circuit when they, because they come up with the funding. Look at the German Grand Prix this year.
Yeah.
Pulled completely.
Belgium a few years ago.
I think Seoul's still under contract for holding a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was slightly different because that basically went bankrupt, didn't it? But. Do you think it's just lobbying? If we're talking like the difference of like less than 10 million that people are throwing around, do you think it's just people are trying to get a better deal for themselves somewhere?
Not when you've got potentially New Jersey, though. I think if that was going to happen, it would have happened by now.
Yeah.
But not when you've got talk about Laguna Seca being rebuilt to be Formula One.
But if we lose circuit for the Americas, that guy's not going to put money into another circuit.
Well,
no, but
he is.
Well, he is, because
he's got Mexico.
There's Mexico, and he's going to be dealing with the California state legislature. Because don't forget, in the US, not all the financial decisions don't just come from Washington.
Yeah.
And that's it. Each state is responsible for taxation.
Mm-hmm.
So California could just say, yeah, we'll give you this much and we'll throw all these tax breaks in.
Yeah.
Put your Formula One race on here.
Yeah.
So that could easily happen and we'll still end up with a race in America.
Yeah,
it will still be a Tarvo Hellman promoted race.
I like Formula One in the US, I have to be honest. I like where it is now. Yeah. I like the Austin Grand Prix. I think it's a fantastic circuit. It is a tribute to many other circuits. But it's always provided a good race.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think on that we can say it's one of the few occasions where Herman Tilke didn't screw up.
Yeah, you got it right.
Well, let's face it, regardless of
stop clock's right twice a day.
Yeah. Regardless of what the... it's like having a race in America, and if we enjoy the circuit or the drivers enjoy the atmosphere, just for the sustainability of Formula One, it's a good market to break. No, if they break America, it's going to be big news, and it essentially could make Formula One take another step, you know, up the global
ladder. As we've said before, look, the problem that Formula One has got in America is Formula One is international,
mm-hmm.
And trying to attract an American audience where there's only one race out of the calendar in America.
Yeah.
When you're going up against IndyCar and NASCAR,
yeah.
Where practically every race, with maybe the exception of one or two,
mm-hmm.
is in America,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to worry. You know, everything on those calendars can be scheduled around the all-powerful TV networks.
Yeah,
you know when the races happen. Say, for example, any race in Europe.
Yeah,
it starts 1 o'clock UK time. That means in New York, it's going to be starting at 8 o'clock in the morning. And in California, you're going to have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch the entire European season.
Yeah. And the Asian races are going to be middle of the night ones, aren't they?
The Asian races, it's either going to be middle of the night or it's going to be prime time. And prime time American TV on a Sunday night, you're going to have to move the NFL out of the way. Or baseball.
And let's face it, even if you're not moving out of the way on a channel, say it's on a channel that's independent of those things, then you're up against it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to be competing with other sports that draw in tens of millions of viewers.
Though there has been talk of two races in the US in the same season.
Yeah.
It's happened in the past, of course.
Happened in the 70s.
We've also got Canada, which is the same general sort of time zone. We've got Mexico, which is the same general time zone.
Yeah.
Brazil,
similar time zone.
Yeah.
So, Americanization of it is possible, and I'm talking the whole of North, and, North, South and Central America, rather than USA.
USA, yeah.
Just to make it more attractive, because it would help if there'd been a decent American driver since Mario Andretti.
The top and bottom of this.
You were trying to think of one, weren't you?
We were trying to think of decent racing drivers. Well, not decent racing drivers, decent Formula One drivers from America. Michael Andretti certainly doesn't count.
No.
Mario, yes.
Yeah.
Phil Hill.
Yeah, but how far are you going? How far are you going back?
Phil Hill was 61 world champion, was he? 1961.
Yeah, Andretti '70s.
Andretti very early '70s.
Yeah, and America really hasn't. Even when America had two Grand Prix, because you used to have Watkins Glen and Long Beach.
Yeah.
Or then occasionally Phoenix, or we won't mention the thing in
Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah.
We'll try not to mention the thing in Caesar's Palace car park.
Yeah, and there was the one in Dallas, wasn't there? Street circuit in Dallas, where Mansell pushed his car over the line and passed out.
Yeah.
Because it was ridiculously hot.
But going back to the time when we did have lots of American races, we still had a lack of American drivers.
Yeah.
And you can see why it's difficult, for the most part, for Formula One to get over, because the fans, and we know there are American Formula One fans, Rich, Kevin, hi guys.
I've read some of their tweets, they're not fans.
They're fans of certain aspects of Formula One in the same way that you're a fan of Jenson Button.
They're fans of stupid. Carry on.
Okay.
Try to alienate our audience, Lee. Thank
only
you
only a couple of them.
We might have more American listeners.
Our audience appreciate honesty. And out of respect to all the Stevens maniacs out there,
I'm hovering over the pause button. I'm also hovering over the insert Jacques button. But no, on a serious point, there haven't been any American drivers for them to really get behind.
Well, no, Formula One isn't the pinnacle for American drivers.
No, it is NASCAR and it is IndyCar.
Yeah. Oh, do you think so? Do you not think there's that even your top American driver on the IndyCar grid, if they could get a seat in Formula One, they would prefer to be in Formula One?
I don't think there are very many who would jump at the opportunity for Formula One in the same way that people in the UK would.
No, I don't know. I still think that in motor racing terms, those drivers look at Formula One as being the pinnacle.
Yeah, I think the drivers might do, but I mean, when you had Scott Speed, who was a reality TV star, essentially, wasn't he, let's be honest?
Yeah.
Who was
he?
Yeah, reality TV star. Came up through the Red Bull reality TV show.
Is this where they were perfecting the driver programme?
That's how it started. It was a reality TV show.
That's how it started. It was in America, and he was the winner of that. And it wasn't guaranteed a Formula One seat, was he? He was guaranteed a test. Anyway, in relative terms, he did pretty well. And his season in Formula One, or was it three quarters of a season that he did, didn't work out for him at all.
Punching his mechanic wasn't a great idea.
No, that wasn't a great idea either.
Something the Stevens maniacs would do.
There was Scott Speed, okay? Since Scott Speed was, 2006, 2007... possibly even earlier than that, Alexander Rossi,
who is performing quite well,
given
what he's driving.
Yeah. I mean, he did lose the battle with Will Stevens this weekend. Will Stevens actually beat Rossi, I think, for the first time that they've been racing together.
Yeah, but Rossi's just been bombed into the car, hasn't he?
Ferrari have parachuted him in when he's had little if no development time in the car. I mean, he was Marussia's reserve driver last season.
Yeah.
And I think he got about two Friday sessions out of the whole year.
It's one of the reasons he's not racing in the next race as well, isn't he? Because he's back to GP2.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a GP2 race
in Bahrain, I think it is.
He obviously has enough about him for Ferrari to want to investigate further, and he's had a good showing in GP2. Obviously, GP2 this year has been the all-conquering Stoffel Vandoorne.
Yeah.
In a car that I think Alonso would quite like to drive, because he might score points in an F1 race.
GP2 engine?
GP2!
Yeah, that's it. Screaming GP2 all the time does not make it a GP2 car.
Yeah. But, there's been... But, yeah, you have to say, from looking at it on the American side of things, IndyCar and NASCAR are the high points of, you know, it's the pinnacle of motorsport.
Juan Pablo Montoya dropped like a sack of shit to come to Formula One.
Juan Pablo Montoya was already signed to Williams, and he was only doing a year in IndyCar. As part of the contract swap,
he wouldn't come when they wanted
him.
He's not from the USA. But I was just meaning top flight Indy drivers. But the
Jack Villeneuve.
Yeah.
But Canadian.
What
I was going to say was, is it going to be the problem where if you look at, I might have the wrong end of the stick here, but if you look at I've got wrong end of the tree. If you look at the sports that are really popular in America, if you take baseball out of that, which is quite a slow-paced game, everything that America is into are quite action-packed and like very fast-paced sports. You know, there's something always going on. Even if you break into the fact that, you know, like they're field sports are broken into quarters, aren't they?
Mm.
So it's all very easily digestible.
Your best Formula One is not. One is 2 hours sitting in front of your television but trying to work out.
And it's not even that. Sometimes it's two hours sat in front of your television watching nobody actually do anything.
Yeah, or waiting for something to happen in the last sort of stint.
So for Formula One to get over in America, does Formula One need to be more like GP2?
GP2 sometimes produces better racing. And we had a brief chat online with a friend of ours, didn't we, Paul? Ben O'Hare.
Yes.
That
bellend.
We had a brief chat with Ben, and I said to Ben, who's not, he's on the fringes of becoming a fan of Formula One. He's not, you know, he finds the rivalry between Rosberg and Hamilton exciting.
Mm-hmm.
He finds the technological side of things quite exciting. Doesn't understand them, finds it quite exciting.
Yeah.
Doesn't like the fact you've got to sit down every other Sunday and sit there for 2 hours and watch and try and understand why people on different tyres are doing different things.
Cricket.
I don't mind cricket.
I like cricket.
Fuck me. Yeah, but I don't mind the complaint that Formula One is 2 hours long when you enjoy watching a 3 day long
game. Yeah. Three?
Five.
Do five? Why do they do five?
Yeah, and five then they call it a test. How can you do something for 5 days all the time and still be just testing it?
Stop for lunch and tea, it's fine.
Yeah. You got free cake.
No, I'm not into anything you can watch for 5 days and end in a draw still. But
to be fair, test cricket for me, going off on a slight tangent, just very brief, test cricket for me, very difficult to watch. I do prefer the quicker games, which are over in less than a day.
let me just find Ben's comments, because I mean this is what somebody who
is it what basically
likes it but isn't.
Basically, what Formula One should be targeting is people like Ben, who understand the exciting rivalry that can happen between two drivers, but doesn't understand
sports fans.
Yeah, but doesn't understand why they're following each other instead of actually racing each other.
Well, if you're listening, Ben, check out Formula E.
Wear earplugs. Yeah, I mean, what Ben said was
the
qualification of practice sessions are strange in terms of cubes 1, 2, 3, etc. I think probably most F1 is exciting when overtaking is happening. It seems to me the teams are fixed on getting more speed and not how to overtake. So the more opportunities there are to overtake, the better.
It's fair.
You can't disagree with that.
No, you can't at all. I think I made a point about simplifying the sport to make it more exciting.
I bet he had a migraine after he thought that. That would have been a migraine.
That would have been
lie down, a cup of peppermint tea.
Socks and slippers.
Yeah.
You do realise we have a drummer discussing the thoughts of another drummer. There's a lot of knuckle dragging going on right now.
This is what's happening.
But no, he does make some valid points.
He does.
I read a couple of things about drivers saying the cars aren't really a challenge to drive. Modern day engineering means the challenge of a driver taming the car is gone. I'd like to see something like that challenge come back. The thing I've really got to like about the sport is the relationships between the two drivers in the team. Hamilton-Rosberg relationship is fascinating.
Yeah.
It
creates its own drama, which is good enough to pull people in to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't do that every single time.
No.
There's a rate, and it should do.
And if you watch the media sterilisation of the drivers is not helping.
And if you watch a sport like the one we referenced a few weeks ago, the MotoGP, MotoGP is not quite as exciting as it has been in the last few years. Mm-hmm. Dan, you made the point of in that final race of the season, Valentino Rossi went from like last to fourth in like the first eight laps, and then couldn't get anywhere near the top three riders because of the vastness in performance between the top teams and the rest of them.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose the thing is,
there was overtaking, there was close racing. There should have been a lot closer racing. We've already discussed this, but if Formula One was more like MotoGP in terms of racing, it would pull people in by the millions worldwide.
Oh, no, I think you're wrong, because let's not pretend that every MotoGP race is grand. Like, seven times out of ten, MotoGP can be more boring than Formula One.
But there is always more overtaking.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Halfway through the race, it's normally still not possible to tell who's going to win.
Sometimes with like a lap to go, it's not possible to tell who's
going to win. I genuinely think if you were to go back and watch the season through again, there was more competitive races in Formula One this year than there was in MotoGP.
I don't know. That's an interesting one.
That's one for the season review episode.
I've watched every race this year of MotoGP, and there was definitely more races where I just
go back three or four years in MotoGP.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Every race was like it was at Phillip Island this year, which is just an incredible race.
Yeah.
On two wheels, but you know, if the four wheel variety Formula One could get their racing like that. Mm-hmm. But
it's really difficult to compare the two because the cars are so much wider than the bikes,
which
means that in relation to the track,
and they're going to get wider,
and they're going to get wider, and also the aerodynamic effects are completely different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I'm starting to see MotoGP bikes with wings.
I mean, we were talking about the laps, weren't we? The Circuit of the Americas, both sports race at the Circuit of the Americas. The Formula One cars doing it about what I think the qualifying time is about 1:45 or 1:46.
Mm-hmm.
And that MotoGP over 2 minutes.
Do you think that there's a case to be made then that where we're talking about all the changes that need to come to Formula One to make it better, thinking about the fact that the cars are wider, is it?
They're going to be wider for 2017.
Rather than trying to design,
they're also going to be in 2017.
Yeah. What?
5 to 6 seconds per faster, lap.
Yeah,
faster than they have been.
I think this is going to lead to less overtaking.
I don't, because
they've got the changes to the nose, which should reduce the effect of dirty air.
Yeah, but then you've got the
and there's going to be less dirty air coming from them with the new angle of the rear wing.
But there's going to overall there will be more downforce on the cars,
which should make them be able to get closer to each other.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I'd have thought when they get closer to each other, you're going to get more disturbance. Because let's face it, if those cars have got more downforce, instantly those cars will be built to rely on having more downforce. So the minute you lose downforce, you lose your car.
I don't think that's the case, because
Martin Brundle thinks this is the case. Also.
But with the wider cars, you've got a bigger surface area for the Venturi effect, holding the car to the ground.
Yeah, but the top bottom of this, fucking around with aero to make the cars faster and to give them more downforce isn't going to fix racing. Taking aero off and giving them more mechanical grip. That's what's going to fix racing.
Yeah, mechanical grip doesn't appear to be something that...
Stop doing it on the top of the car as well. If they're going to do stuff, like limit aero on top and let them have blown diffusers again.
It's the argument, again, is it, which I've discussed many times in the past.
Yeah.
Do you let Formula 1 become essentially GP1 and let all the chassis become the same and let the designers try and get as much performance out of other parts of the car, the engines, you know, the very limited aero things that you'd be allowed to put onto the cars? Or do you completely undisclose everything in Formula One, allow them to be complete prototypes to within very, very basic rules instead of entire encyclopedias, you know, and subsections of rules? And instead of having everything very secret, just completely disclose everything so that everybody can see what everybody else has been doing to their cars.
I think the worry there is the fact is if you had a sport like that where the rules were, you know, it was pretty much open and it was a full
yeah, life, obviously you'd have to have some rules, otherwise you build a car that's as wide as the track.
Yeah.
The problem with that is, though, you end up with a disparity because the teams with the most money,
that's exactly what I was
to throw into it, would be the most successful ones.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be seeing the manners 4 seconds off the pace. You'd be seeing the manners 12 seconds off the pace.
Yeah.
The Force Indias and Sauber's 10 seconds off.
Yeah, like maybe budget cap it or something like that. But you've got to have like a basic set of rules. Is, you know, what I'm saying is the rules that Formula One finds itself in the moment, yeah, are they too choking? And do they need to just basically just say, right, okay, all go the same way? Mm-hmm. Or do they just need to be like, right, scrap everything we've done before, just do what you want?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much what Bernie wants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just said he wants to hit the reset button and come up with everything new all over again from the beginning.
Yeah. I would love, I think I've said this before, I would love to go back to the days when you had the Brabhams with the downforce fans and six wheels on the cars and
six-wheel Tyrrells with like little windows to see what the drivers are doing with their feet.
Yeah. Yeah, just make it so that you could recognise the car from the shape of the car rather than the colour of the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which at the moment is again grey. All the cars on the circuit grey. Let's just have it.
Well, this is my point. I've said this a few times on the podcast when we've talked about Formula One, the future of Formula One, and the state of Formula One. That to a person like Ben, being the perfect example for this.
Yep.
If I showed him a 2007 Arrows, and this year's Mercedes car, he'd go, "Well, they're Formula One cars.
They don't look any different."
Do they race each other now? You know, he wouldn't think that there is like over a decade between them.
I know what you mean.
No, I can see that. I think the Arrows had a slightly pointed nose, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Moving on to actually what's on the cars. Big sponsorship news this week is that Tag Heuer are to end their very, very long-standing relationship with McLaren.
They're calling time on it.
They are ending their 30-year ties with McLaren to the point where there was Tag McLaren at one point, wasn't it?
Yeah, when McLaren had the Porsche engines, they were rebranded as Tag Porsche.
Tag Porsche.
Tag Porsche McLaren.
Imagine if Pastor Maldonado was in that as well. He tags everybody.
How long have you been thinking that one up?
Not long. Tag Pastor.
Tag Leo Tedley.
Oh, yeah.
So, should we talk about Formula One?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they are moving to Red Bull.
Which is a hammer blow for McLaren and a massive boost for Red Bull.
Because it means if they've got a sponsor, that means we'll be seeing them on the grid next season.
Well, they've guaranteed it anyway, haven't they? They confirmed.
Yeah, Christian Horner confirmed the Red Bull. What hasn't been confirmed yet is that Toro Rosso will be on the grid for 2016. That has not been confirmed. Red Bull's
empty. No, it has, confirmed. Because they've confirmed the drivers.
I don't think they've officially confirmed anything yet.
I think.
They've confirmed that the Red Bull organisation owns the drivers. They will choose what to put them in.
Yeah. I think. Also, Verstappen is confirmed as a Toro Rosso driver for next year.
I thought I read that Sainz and Verstappen.
I don't think there's been any official announcement to say that they've come. Team managers press conference at the Mexican Grand Prix.
There's a lot of words there.
Boss's press conference at the Mexican Grand Prix. They asked Franz Tost whether or not he would expect to see Toro Rosso on the grid, and he said, "I would expect us to be on the grid." And I said, "And are you going to retain the drivers that you have for this year, next year?" And what he actually said was, if we're on the grid next year, I would expect us to keep the drivers that we've had this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a very good job. But there's not actually been an official confirmation, as far as I'm aware, that Toro Rosso are A, going to be on the grid next year, and B, going to retain both drivers.
Sorry, Chris, I'm going to jump in on this one, because Friday last week, they did say they are keeping the drivers. It's listed on the official entry sheet as the Scuderia Toro Rosso TBA.
TBA?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm happy to be corrected. As I say, I was not aware of that, but yeah.
Scuderia, does that mean the team Ferrari engines?
No,
Scuderia means team in Italian.
Oh, right. Okay.
They were going to be Squadra Toro Rosso originally, but that actually
meant
sort of group.
Okay.
No, Scuderia means team.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because Minardi was Scuderia Minardi.
I'm playing and learning.
And they've always been Scuderia Toro Rosso, haven't they? Since they entered.
Yeah, because they were going to enter a Squadra Toro Rosso, and then somebody said, actually, that's not probably the right thing. As a tribute to Minardi, they kept the Italian in the
Scuderia
name.
Scuderia Toro Rosso.
Yeah. So, yeah, it does look like... Yeah,
as a tribute to Minardi...
And he's off again.
And it also means we can have the same name as the main team and not
just
get,
in Italian.
And not get
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Red Bull B or Red Bull.
Red Bull.
It's what's going to be powering the car that is
TBA.
TBA. Along with Red Bull, although will they go for the nameless? No, what did we call it? The Renfinity engines.
Renfinity, yeah. I don't know if it was Scuderia Toro Rosso Infinity. Mm. But they might continue with Renault, because Toro Rosso and Renault's relationship hasn't broken down. Yeah.
But the problem seems to have been at a higher level than Horner, because Dietrich Mateschitz has got involved, and he is the man with the money with everything with Red Bulls on it.
I don't think in the grand scheme of things, when you talk about backstage politics, I think Red Bull are looked at as the team with four cars. I don't think Toro Rosso are looked at as individual entities.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying all season, so Red Bull are saying they'll pull out. Where does that leave Toro Rosso? But
yeah.
I think it's Red Bull Group.
Yeah.
It's gonna be all fours with that logo on it.
Yeah.
Don't
get a bull with two legs. Unless it's a minor draw. Oh, the advertising potential is endless.
Shall we talk about Formula One? So, the latest thinking is it's going to be Renault engines with Nissan tuning, effectively.
Essentially, Red Bull will have their own engineers rather than having Renault engineers tinkering with their engines during race weekends. Renault will just be a supplier of the engines. Now, what I heard when I was in Australia, the very enthusiastic man who does Formula One with his fake headphones, saying that they'll be using Renault engines under the Infiniti brand. And then this was unfounded and went very quiet for a long time. However, it now seems to be gathering pace.
Makes
this is
sense,
actually what's going to happen. It's going to be a Red Bull Infiniti.
So essentially, they're just dropping the Renault.
They're just dropping the Renault. Well, it was Infiniti Red Bull Racing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Up until last year. And Infiniti just sort of became another sponsor again. So it would be Red Bull Infiniti. Infiniti being the engine that powered it. But actually, it's just a rebadged Renault Formula One.
Just like the old Mechachromes and Playlifes were.
I love the idea, though, that the fucking... But half the battle that that Red Bull and Renault had was Red Bull weren't happy with the performance of the engine. Renault weren't happy because over the course of the successful period of Red Bull, they didn't think that they quite got the credit they deserved for helping Red Bull win titles. So now Renault are getting literally no credit for the future of Red Bull.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I think it's a bridge gap anyway for 2016. But they're looking to an entirely new engine supplier for 2017.
They're going to have to build a road, aren't they?
One of them that they haven't managed to piss off.
They didn't manage to piss off VW. VW managed to piss themselves off.
Yeah. VW pissed the entire world off.
Yeah, under a cloud of its own smoke.
But do you think that? I mean, surely the only option for them then maybe this is the bit, this is part of the idea, the fact that if they're to go and get a Renault engine and have a team of Renault engineers working on their engine, do you think then Red Bull's plan will be, see how that goes, if this goes well, we'll buy those people and then they can do our engines?
Possibly.
Well, yeah.
See, it's, you know, if they're gonna end up building their own engines and they've got an in-house team of engine builders which are doing it for Renault, then they just completely strip the Renault part out.
I mean, it could actually be that Nissan are working on something under the Infiniti brand to stick in the back of a Red Bull in 2017 on one of the two engine specs.
Yeah. But if there's anything we've learned from
Red
this
Bull
year...
Red Bull Elmore? Red Bull Cosworth?
Yeah.
But if there's anything we've learned from this year, unless they end up being the manufacturer that's contracted to make the hybrid engine, you know, the budget engines. If it's going to be a hybrid, if Honda have shown us anything, it's that you can't just decide, I'm going to go in Formula One. Let's build an engine.
Yeah, quite right. But
unless Honda have made all the mistakes now, so they've got the blueprint of what not to do.
Well, I mean, it's Elmore and Cosworth that are the two favourites to get the supply contracts for the cheaper engines.
Yeah, Cosworth makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
They've been in Formula One for so long.
Well, they built a 2014 prototype when they bought it.
Mm.
And they decided it would be too expensive to produce the amount of power units that would be needed.
Wouldn't it be funny if that was the better engine? If that was, like, well better than Mercedes?
Cosworth?
Yeah.
Mm. It's not unfeasible at all.
No. And then with Elmore, of course, formerly part of Mercedes, when McLaren had the big comeback in the 90s, with the colour change and Hakkinen's two world championships, it was an Elmore-tuned Mercedes engine that was powering the car.
Mm.
So Elmore have got the history and they do know what they're doing. Could we see it in the back of a Red Bull? Yeah, probably.
Red Bull Elmore?
Yeah.
Or Elmore bounces to something else?
Yeah.
Ilfinity. Did Elmore also do something with Ferrari many, many years ago?
It does ring a bell.
Yeah.
Wasn't Elmore involved with Mercedes when McLaren had that all the success?
Isn't that what Paul said?
That's what I just said about when Hakkinen won his two titles.
Oh, was it? Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, it was an Elmore-tuned engine. Mercedes engine in the back of the car.
It wasn't the only thing that was tuned. I was well tuned out. I was literally trying to work out whether that was what happened while you were saying it. I'm not listening.
Elmore could provide engines to Red Bull, branded under a different name as well. That's completely completely doable from both sides of the situation. You know, Red Bull could want an Elmore engine, but, you know, badged out as something else.
Well, yeah, they wouldn't want ill, they'd want totally sick.
Sick more. To the extreme.
Jesus.
You watch now, it'd be the Red Bull, the Red Bull Tony Hawk. He gets put in the back. But yeah, it's...
Travis Pastrana's their poster boy still.
Yeah, he is. It's something to keep your eye on for the future, not just for 2016, but what develops throughout 2016 and into 2017.
I've got a funny feeling we're going to do more talking next year about 2017 than we are about 2016.
Like, possibly. We've done more talking about 2017 than we have 2015 this year.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Well, certainly from about August onwards.
Yeah.
And then it's going 2017 is going to come. Nothing's going to change apart from this. Cars are going to look slightly different. And go,
was that it?
All the cars will be identical power-wise and Max Verstappen will be world champion.
To the Max Verstappen, of course.
To the Max Verstappen, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's about covered everything we've got on tonight's running order.
I think so.
Yeah, we'd just like to send our condolences out to Sebastian Vettel for having a grid boy this weekend.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that. You whether his name was Gary or Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned that Monaco, didn't he? Not very happy about that.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be back to his normal. Is it Etihad or Emirates that sponsor the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix? I
think
it's Emirates, isn't it?
I don't know.
So I'll have an air hostess this week.
It's probably Etihad.
I think it's probably Etihad.
Abu Dhabi based company. Emirates of Dubai.
Oh, right, okay. All I know is they're both big Arabian airlines and both own lots of stadiums and things.
Yeah, yeah.
Sponsor sports. And
yeah, I think it's the Etihad Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.
Right.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, whatever's in front of his car will look like an air hostess. Sorry, stewardess or flight attendant or whatever they call them these days.
Grim boy in a waistcoat.
Yeah, that'll be the one.
I picked the wrong time to tune out again, didn't I? What the fuck are you talking about? I just tuned back in there, heard air hostesses.
Zettel and his grid, Gary.
Right.
On that note, we're going to feed Lee quite a lot of coffee and show him pictures of Formula One cars so he knows what he's talking about for next week.
I know
what
that'll make a change.
Yeah, that will be a first. So we'll be back next week with a preview of the season finale.
Oh no, already.
I know. Oh, don't worry, we've got we'll have lots of things to talk about over the winter.
Mainly
2017.
To be fair, like the last race of the season, I'm quite happy for it. I'm a Jensen Button fan. This season has been zero crack.
I think Jensen Button's quite looking forward to the winter as well.
Over the winter break, all we're gonna be talking about is, are McLaren gonna come back any good?
Yeah.
And what engines are gonna Red Bull have? So it's going to be just like in season.
It's just be like in season without race reviews.
Yes.
And we'll try and get people involved in the Formula One world to join in the podcast.
Yeah, if you are involved in Formula One in any professional capacity.
And I haven't upset you or offended you. Ooh.
So for that person that's involved in Formula One in a professional capacity.
any that Lee hasn't upset and offended. Would you like to come and join us on the podcast and meet us face to face?
That would be amazing.
So while Lee goes and hides under a table, we will be back next week.
I hide from no man.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.